Welcome to the I Speak FSBO podcast, where we pull back the curtain from the real estate industry and expose everything they don't want you to know. We share tips, tricks, myths, and truths to fight against outdated real estate traditions so you can sell your home for top dollar without having to pay a dime in commission or sacrifice your time. It's time for homeowners to take back the power and break up the monopoly. This is the I Speak FSBO podcast, and this is your host, Josh Knox.
Hey everybody, it's Josh with the I Speak FSBO podcast. I just wanted to give you a quick intro into this episode, and you're going to hear me give another intro as well, and it was just how I did the recording with our guest today, Scott from Direct Mortgage. But I wanted to point out that Scott's going to share with us in this interview a couple of key things that you want to listen for, which is how to identify a good lender. Also, which questions you should ask a lender when you're verifying a buyer and why that's important. And then a few other tips in terms of just how a real estate transaction actually works and why the parties that are involved, such as a seller and a lender and a buyer and a title company, are actually working to make sure the transaction closes. So take a listen. It's about a 30-minute interview, but really good information on why you should work with a lender, why you should verify a buyer, and then from a lender's perspective, you know, the things to look out for, specific types of loan programs, so on and so forth. So take a listen. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you get good information out of it.
Hey, everybody. It's Josh with the I Speak FSBO podcast. Welcome to the episode today. Today, I'm excited to have a very experienced lender with us. We're going to be talking to Scott today with Direct Mortgage, and he's going to share with us his insight on how financing works, number one, so that you can understand it from a seller's perspective, and then number two, how types of financing can impact you as a for sale by owner and some of the things that you can do to make sure that your deal goes smoothly when you're working with a buyer and the buyer's lender. So there you have it. And welcome to the episode, Scott. Thanks for being on today. I appreciate it.
Hi, Josh. Glad to be here. You're welcome.
Okay, Scott. So let's just go through this, I guess, one by one. If you don't mind just sharing with us, you know, the different types of financing that people would normally see in a real estate transaction, a seller might normally see, and then we'll just kind of go from there.
Sure. There are mainly three types. So you have conventional, which is the most common, and you have FHA, and you have VA. And there are little nuances with each loan. But, you know, in my opinion, each of these programs have an equal success rate of closing. So if you're a seller and you're thinking which one is best, if you get an offer, you're wondering which one is best, I think they all have an equal success chance of closing. But let me just maybe educate a seller on what the underwriting process is. I see there's three benchmarks to the underwriting process. So there's the initial underwriting where they look at all the paperwork, and then there's the appraisal gets done and the appraisal gets reviewed. And then the third step and final step is the final underwriting where everything gets signed off and we go close. So if I were a seller and I was thinking about which loan is best, well, right now in the current mortgage environment, a top tier cookie cutter borrower will go conventional and they'd have a strong down payment. If I recommend a borrower were to go FHA, it's almost always because their credit score is a little low and FHA has some forgiving guidelines for that. You know, one nuanced thing with FHA and with VA is the appraisal. So properties have to meet certain guidelines to be eligible for FHA and VA. So sometimes there's some repairs and some certain things that a seller will have to do to improve their house to make meet those guidelines. Like for VA, you have to can't have any peeling paint, and you have to have handrails in certain spots. But I always, you know, I just kind of wanted to say, like, just because somebody is getting an FHA loan doesn't mean they are not a good borrower, because maybe their credit score is lower from a situation out of their control, and it just is what it is. Okay.
Okay.
The third one, the VA loan, that's a fantastic loan for the borrower. It's the best loan out there because it's 100% financing. There's no mortgage insurance. But also, again, with the appraisal, the VA appraisal tends to be more conservative, and it might take a little bit longer to get done because they have 10 business days to get the appraisal back. So usually you can't close the transaction in 2 to 3 weeks like you could with a conventional loan. It might take just a little bit longer because of the appraisal.
Okay. Is there, if you're, if we're talking about conventional loan, you said, you know, usually somebody that's a top tier buyer with a strong down payment. What do you mean by a strong down payment?
Typically, the minimum down on a conventional loan is 5%. There are 3% down products. Most of my transactions are conventional loans, and the borrower is putting down anywhere from 5 to 25%. I think, you know, when you get an offer as a seller and they put in the first page of the contract that shows what the intended down payment will be, it's not like a binding number, and it's just kind of what's intended. That can help make the borrower look a little stronger, because if they have cash in their bank account, then something, if something comes up, like if they're planning on putting 10% down, all of a sudden they got these taxes that are due that are required to be paid. They're paying 10% down. Well, then, oh crap, I got to pay these taxes. Well, that's okay. You can still put the minimum down at 5%, 6%, 7%, whatever it is, and take care of those taxes. So if you're only putting 5% down and something comes up, you could get in the seller, I'm sorry, the buyer could get in a pinch. So a strong down payment, usually if a realtor were to call me or a seller were to call me and say, how qualified is your borrower? Then I would tell them, you know, I'd just be straightforward and honest with them. And if they have a strong down payment, then that would just be verified assets that meets the requirements. And I think 10% is a strong down payment. Anything above 10% is a strong down payment.
Okay. Okay, cool. So I want to go down this path, though, that you mentioned, and then we'll come back to maybe some things about FHA or VA financing that are different from conventional. But you said if a realtor or a seller were to call you and ask about how strong a particular buyer is, my question to you is what questions should a home seller be asking you if they're calling to find out how qualified that buyer is? And then the second part of that question is what can you say, like what information can you give out, right? Because some of that information is proprietary, but what information mm-hmm. can you give out to help give confidence to a seller who is following up on a potential buyer?
Yeah, it's great. Good stuff. So a question that the seller would ask me, a lender, is, okay, Mr. Lender, Mrs. Lender, I see your pre-approval letter, but I just wanted to ask you a question. Have you pulled credit? Have you seen the income and the assets? Has it gone through underwriting? Because some lenders will just issue a pre-qualification letter just based on a 10-minute conversation and not have actually looked at all this stuff. Another great question that I get is, am I a loan broker or do I have in-house underwriting? And agents and sellers love it when they hear that we have in-house underwriting, because there can be a disconnect if underwriting is in a different state, as a loan broker might be. So you have some basic questions. Have you pulled credit? Have you seen income and assets? Has gone through underwriting? And that's a legitimate pre-approval, pre-qualification process. And then just based on the confidence and the work that the lender has done, you as a seller can make an educated decision, say, okay, this borrower really is been pre-qualified. They've been vetted out and they've gone through the process to be ready for underwriting approval.
Okay, so when somebody's asking those questions, then you're basically giving yes and no answers, and that's where your confidence comes from. Is that right? Am I hearing you right?
Yes. I do, you know, I like to, obviously, like you said, I can't disclose too much. It's a private situation. But I can say, you know, a lot of questions that I guess I would get asked is, do you have any concerns? Do you have any concerns with this process? And I would tell them, yeah, yes or no. Like I had one recently where I had a concern with the borrower's credit history. Going FHA, they had no credit history, and I got a green light in my system through initial underwriting, but that is still a concern that I had that I wanted to disclose as we go through the process. Like this still needs to get through. I can't just streamline this whole thing. And so things like that, if you have any concerns with this borrower, is a great question.
Okay. And I'm just trying to think of maybe what the next line of questioning would be with that, because in my experience, you know, when I ask those questions, there's still things that could creep up, but the end result is if a seller is asking these questions, just like you said, you know, they're able to make an educated decision, go, okay, I think I can proceed with this buyer's offer, and then we can go under contract because the lender has given me a confidence level of, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Right.
Okay.
You can kind of tell a good lender is somebody who is confident that can answer these questions and say, yeah, I've looked at this stuff.
What's another way to determine if the lender is a good lender?
I think you really can't, unless you're in the industry, as a seller for sale by owner. You might have a lender's reputation might precede them, and you might recognize the name. But it really comes down to the loan officer. I think a good loan officer is somebody who communicates really well and also takes it very serious and understands this is a big transaction and you want it to be very smooth and you can navigate the process with ease.
Is there an advantage then for the, you know, and the whole purpose of this podcast that I've shared with you previously is that people really can sell their own home. Is there an advantage to the seller just staying maybe in once a week communication with the buyer's lender to make sure everything's running smoothly?
Yes. Just for the seller's benefit to know what's going on, since they don't have an agent to feed them that information. Usually I would keep the agents talk and we communicate that way. And then that feeds down to the seller. If they want me to communicate with them, I could say, here's where we're at. And they could text me, call me. Where are we at? Okay. Is the appraisal back? Okay, great. What's the next step? And I'll be happy to tell them what's going on. That's not something too personal that I wouldn't be able to share with And it's just be peace of mind for them to know what the next step is and what they can expect. If we're ready to close early, for example, we could talk about that.
Okay. Now this is a different line of questioning, but what would be the advantage of a seller having a good lender partner to work with even before they found a buyer?
Somebody that can just verify the information, verify the buyer's information, and it would be a lender partner that they trust, that they know has good experience, that could double check the pre-approval letter that they're looking at. And that's, I've seen that before too, you know, hey, you know, thank you for your offer. This is great. Would you just mind calling my lender and letting him or her talk to you? And that way I can verify this information. And then that would be helpful and give the seller peace of mind. And if I come back and I say, you know, there might be some concerns with this buyer. They don't have, this is their very first house. They don't have any history. They're new on the job. There might be a couple concerns that I'm sure could get worked through. But if you're a concerned seller, then maybe you should ask for a little more earnest money. Because your house will be taken off the market during this process. You could also tighten up the financing and appraisal deadline on the contract to make sure see if the lender can meet those deadlines of having final underwriting approval by a certain deadline. That way, if there is an issue and the deal doesn't go through, then you can get your house back on the market sooner by that financing and appraisal deadline.
What do you, now I've shared this in a different podcast, but from your perspective, what do you think, or in your experience, what are the best financing and appraisal deadlines? Is it 20 days after the contract's written? Is it 30 days after the contract's written? What's a good time frame for a buyer and a seller to agree upon when it comes out? Because in the other podcast, I give them specific dates. I think it's between 25 and 28 days from the contract that financing and appraisal should be totally complete. Now that is, I will say that is based upon who the particular buyer is using as a lender. I know in my experience that banks and credit unions do take a little bit longer to get their loans processed. Whereas mm-hmm. if somebody were to work with someone like you, where you're at in the industry, even with your in-house financing, you have more flexibility and you can typically, in my experience, again, get deals done faster. So mm-hmm. you don't write a contract for longer. So that was a long way to ask, you know, what do you think is, what do you think is a good timeline?
It's always a moving target. Underwriting can be same day. It can be 2 days, it can be 3 days. Like even with in-house underwriting and having all this control. So that fluctuates. And then the appraisal fluctuates. Some, you know, last summer appraisers were taking a week and a half to get their reports back because they were just so busy. There's just nothing you can do about that. So from contract date, you know, anywhere between 2 and 3 weeks from contract date for an FNA deadline is aggressive and would be a good lender could get just about all wrapped up in those 2 to 3 weeks right now because appraisers aren't actually taking that long.
So that's even a good question that a seller could ask a lender is, you know, we have these contract dates in front of us. Do you feel confident you can hit those? Right? Because
that's a great question. Yeah.
If a seller is looking at a contract and verifying a buyer through a pre-approval letter, then they're going to have that date in front of them and then likely that lender may not have that contract in front of them yet because it's not accepted at that point. But when it comes to asking a good question, I think that seems like a solid question to ask as a seller, like, hey,
you gave me your confidence level on the buyer that sells and getting through the process. Tell me your confidence level on getting it done within the date of the contract. Here are those dates.
And that might be the single most important question in my mind, because not closing on time is the most stressful position to be in as a seller, because you don't have any control of the situation. You don't know what's going on, and you think there's an issue. So you need to know, okay, did the lender miss a deadline? Did he miscalculate the turn times, or is his underwriting just slow? His or her underwriting just slow? And that's a great question, because a lot of buyers will just go to a big bank that can take 40 days just to get you an answer. And so you definitely want to be able to meet those deadlines, because the whole transaction is a big domino effect. The whole transaction, you as a seller, you want to sell your house, and you might go buy another house or be moving, and you want to make sure that you close on time and can plan this major life event accordingly.
Right. That's also, I think, a very valid point in why, as a seller, you want to make sure you're following up once a week with the buyer's lender to make sure everything is on task. Because in my experience, the more you know about what's going on, even if somebody says to you, hey, nothing's changed as of today, you still have information that you can work from. And that seems to be one of the biggest frustrations in real estate transactions, even if you're using a professional agent to help you, is having all the information available to you. So, okay, well, good. Let's get back to, because I said this before, I wanted to just ask a couple of follow-up questions in terms of FHA and VA. So you had mentioned, you know, just because somebody is using FHA doesn't mean they're a bad buyer, but it does mean there are different criteria for more so the property to qualify than the buyer to qualify. Is there anything in your experience that's propped up or I guess cropped up is the better word, that is common, that people can just be on the lookout for when they're selling their property?
Nothing comes to mind, because, like I said at the beginning, these loans are going to close. And lenders are pretty good at working through speed bumps in a transaction and working around it, because there usually is an alternative or a workaround for just about any situation with letters of explanation to clarify things with employment, or just clarify how they're, you know, a CPA letter to clarify taxes. I really can't think of anything that would surprise us.
Okay, so that leads me to my next question then. In your experience, how many times does a deal actually fail?
It's like 1 out of 100.
So it's very low.
It's
1%.
Very low. Yeah. I mean, if they get to the point of being pre-approved, I really haven't seen it too often. Unless an appraisal comes in really low, and VA, this is kind of important to note, VA appraisals are generally conservative. And so sometimes those might come in a little bit lower than expected, because the VA is trying to protect the veteran as much as possible.
Right.
And if that VA appraisal comes in below a contract price, then that we'd have to take some negotiating to work through that. I had an appraisal come in low on a deal, which didn't make any sense. It wasn't a VA deal even. But the buyer was willing to bring in the extra money, extra down payment, to cover the difference between the appraisal and the contract price. And so that was able to work through. But yeah, it's really rare for a file to get into, to get halfway along in the transaction and then all of a sudden get denied for whatever reason. Usually if it doesn't work out, if the seller goes under contract and the buyer ends up backing out, even if they say it's financing, the buyer probably just changed their mind or got fired or something, some life event happened and they just can't get this house.
Right.
It's pretty rare. Most of the time, it's just the buyer changes their mind if it doesn't close.
Yeah, and that's kind of the reason I asked the question, because I think, and the listeners of the podcast will know this based upon my other episodes, but there's this forced misconception in the industry that it is so difficult to do a real estate transaction that if you don't know what you're doing, it will fail. What I've illustrated through the experiences that I've shared and then through talking with other for sale by owners and those interviews I've done on the podcast is that's really not the case. The majority of deals, 90%+ of them, work out fine. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean it's 100% smooth or there isn't a challenge in the transaction. But once a house gets or goes under contract, then typically it closes. Typically it works out fine. No major things are found out through title. Nothing major happens with financing. And so that's kind of why I asked that question, was again, mm-hmm. to illustrate from the lending perspective even, that they really do close. I mean, everybody working in the interest of getting the deal closed. So
yeah, you know, when you're working with a lender, when your buyer has a lender, like they're not paying cash and they do their due diligence, we're going to do our due diligence as well on the property, because we're not going to lend onto a property that has liens on it that might have some issues on the title work. So you, as a seller, you don't have to be able to read a title report to know, like, well, the lender's doing their due diligence, so, or whatever the case, that I know there's really not going to be any major issues. A lot of the issues could be covered because the lender is doing their own due diligence on the property. And one of the cool things about real estate transactions in general is anything can be negotiated and everything can be valid as long as it's in writing. You know, you could say, hey, you know what, the appraisal came in low and that's fine. I'll lower my purchase price, but I want free pizza for the rest of my life. Put that thing in writing. The buyer has to give you free pizza for the rest of your life for taking a lower purchase price, right?
Right.
And that's what's interesting about it is there is a cookie cutter way to do it, and the contract is there to have things be normal and give people time to process and complete the transaction. But anything can be worked through and worked out. It is a stressful situation though when you have a buyer that's being difficult and has lots of demand, and you have to deal with that as a seller because you don't have any other representation. And that's the stressful part about it, is you're dealing with deadlines and demand, and you're negotiating with a buyer, with a buyer's agent. But that's really the extent of it. I think the contract protects you as a seller from certain legal ramifications, and there's title work done on the property and there's a loan done on the property. So a lot of this stuff is a little standard.
Yeah. And so it's just a matter of understanding those standards. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I feel like I've done my best at this in that I'm not misleading someone by saying, you know, you can sell your property. It's not as hard as the real estate industry would make it seem. But I'm also saying you do have to put some work into it. I mean, it takes a little bit of your time, but it doesn't take so much of your time that it justifies paying somebody else, you know, anywhere between $600 and $1,200 an hour to do it for you. And mm-hmm. if you'll just understand what is standard in the transaction, you know, step one through step five, or step one through step three, whichever it is, right, then you can get it done like anybody else would get it done. Because the reality is even agents that are licensed are doing the same thing. They're just trying to work through it like you are. And when it comes to negotiation, which I think is wildly misunderstood, especially in the transactions that we talk about at this level, certainly I'm not training people to sell multi-million-dollar homes. What I'm saying to people is if you live in the general price range of between $250,000 to maybe up to $500,000 or $600,000, those transactions are all fairly standard. There's a lot of the same moving parts in those that, that you can learn from. And so when it comes to this, right, it's that if you're a seller and you don't have somebody that's quote unquote negotiating for you, it just means you don't have somebody that's having a conversation with somebody else for you. And that's where I think people can get a little bit, they feel overwhelmed, even though there's not a lot going on there. It's just a simple conversation of, hey, we want to do this. What do you think? And it's not like agents on the other end are going, well, we should really play hard here. And it is what it is. The market determines what people are willing to pay for the house. So anyways, I kind of got off on a tangent there. Well, any other parting words of wisdom? This has been really helpful, and I think our listeners are going to get a ton from this, but any other parting words of wisdom that you would share, or tips or tricks that you've learned in your time in the industry that you would just give as advice?
That kind of put me on the spot there. I think level heads always prevail. And when you have, sometimes these things can be really stressful. And my parting words of advice would just be stay calm and read your contract and keep things in writing. And you'll work out just fine. And it'll close and everything will be totally fine. Does that help?
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Well, thanks again, Scott, for sharing your expertise and your knowledge. And I know our listeners, like I said before, are going to get a ton of it. And I want to say to my listeners, like I always say, I hope this information has been helpful to you. And as always, I hope to see you on the next podcast.